evening, ladies and gentlemen. You are listening to the Weeb Trash Can Podcast. And this is Byron D0. How are you doing, folks?
This is Mechanical Mark here, up and running, ready to give you the rundown and the lowdown on what we're going to be talking about.
And as per usual, you've got your girl 606 here.
Okay, guys. First up, we are down a couple members. Mags as the con ick from Awesome Con. And from what I hear, she had a grand old time. Megatron's 007 is off being all that he can be yet again. Meanwhile, 606 and I are fighting off some post-con lag ourselves, but we're still here to give you the lowdown. But I digress. Tonight's episode is going to be a bit of a gush session for us. Tonight, we are talking about anime that we just can't stop talking about.
Woo!
For those of you who don't know what we mean, you don't have your absolute favorite, but one that you're a bit of an expert on and love to death. You might have heard of it. It's called Dragon Ball.
Byron, do tell us more about this Dragon Ball.
Alright, well, it is the anime series that that helped launch many a shonen flagship series in the US and in modern Japan. And when I say Dragon Ball, I mean the entire franchise, because in my mind, when I think of Dragon Ball, I think of Dragon Ball Z, Dragon Ball Super. To be quite honest, during its original manga run, there was no Z. It was just all Dragon Ball. So when the Saiyan invasion began, it was still Dragon Ball. So for those of you who've been living under a rock for the past 20 or 30 years,
so it's 30.
Yeah, roughly. Dragon Ball is the tale of Son Goku, one of the remnants of an ancient race of warriors known as the Saiyans, or Saiyajin if you are even more of a weeb than me, which, believe it or not, that's possible.
Super Saiyajin!
So he's sent to Earth initially to destroy it. After being rescued by a kindly old man named Gohan, he's accidentally dropped into a chasm, lands on his head, and becomes a kind little boy.
He programmed.
Yes, and it was glorious, wasn't it? Moving on, he meets friends along the way. He learns that he learns what it means to be a protector. He learns that he likes fighting, that he's actually pretty good at it. Fast forward a couple decades, he has a family. His first son, Gohan, ends up being, arguably, if you ask the Phantom, stronger than him. He has the greater potential to become the strongest in the universe. More evil comes along the way. They all become friends, yada yada yada. Fast forward to
friendship through conflict.
Yes, fast forward to a couple decades, a couple more movies. We have Dragon Ball Super. And it's the further adventures of Son Goku and friends, which just ended recently, and it was quite a finale. So, I don't want to go too much on the story because, again, most people know it, but I want to talk about what it means to me. It was so important to me in high school. Dragon Ball is a franchise. Like, it was one of those shows that, like, I just couldn't look away from. It was, I'd always had, like, a special connection to anime in high school. Like, even though I didn't really know much about it, but I just knew that I loved it. Mm-hmm. And being one of the first series that was readily available to Western audiences, I just ingested it as much as possible. Like, I would even go out of my way whenever I was, like, in New York or in Boston, when I still lived in North Carolina, just watching any and all videos, whether they were fan-subbed, or just had no subs at all. Back when International Channel used to run unsubbed episodes of Dragon Ball, I would still watch it. Like, I probably knew, like, maybe 5 words the characters were saying.
Yeah, it was like Sunday nights.
Yes. And they played it all the way through. And I remember falling in love with the soundtrack, because, I gotta be honest, early Funimation soundtracks were not the best. I love Funimation as a company now, but, like, they were still following that standard of, like, trying to make the show their own, so gutting any audio whatsoever. And, yeah, it opened the floodgates for me and a lot of fans. Probably one of the most important things about it was just, understanding the more complex characters. Like, Piccolo and Vegeta are still two of my favorite bad guys turned good guys in any anime to this day. And he resonates with a lot of fans. Like, both characters. More so Vegeta, because he's, like, the one that's always having to bust his ass no matter what. It's like deep down in his mind, he knows that he will never be the absolute best in the universe, but he's still going to fight like he is.
Kakarot, you're trying to offstage me now!
he hides it with such bravado, though. And then there's Piccolo. Piccolo is probably best anime dad ever.
Hands down.
Yes, and I'm kind of jealous of Gohan for that very reason. Gohan had, like, shitty dad with Goku, but still taught him how to fight. And then Piccolo was just like, no, do it this way. It's like, I can't.
He taught him strategy.
Yes. Because Piccolo is a more cerebral character than Goku will ever be. Mm-hmm. So that's probably why Gohan picked up on that. Can you imagine what Gohan would have been like if Goku had been his role model?
He'd probably dumb as rocks.
True. Sure. And then Chi Chi would have one more male she wants to kill in her life.
Oh yeah.
It's launched 1,000 memes. It helped to create Team 4-Star, which launched a ton of other awesome Bridge series, which I still watch religiously. Even Abridged series for anime, like Free, 50% off Solarius. Highly recommend that one. Yu-Gi-Oh! The Abridged series. Not to get off topic, but yeah. It's had such a huge cultural impact. One of the first pieces of anime memorabilia was a Saiyan Prince shirt that I bought from Hot Topic in like 2000. I bought it at the Rockingham Mall. I was 17 going on 18 at the time.
Back when Hot Topic was on the first floor.
Yes. Jesus Christ, I'm old.
Yeah, so am I.
But yeah, so I misread it at the time too. It was a black t-shirt with Vegeta, like, in his proud warrior pose, and I thought it said Saiyan Pride. I still wore that shirt till the peeling wore off, and then eventually I lost it. I miss that shirt.
See, that's the cool thing about these kind of series too, is that you grow up with them.
Yes.
You know, you've been watching them for years and they're still going on, you know.
Absolutely.
And, this one, I feel that a lot, because, you know, back in the day, they were all really young, and you're watching it, and they're growing up. All these characters are growing up as you are as well, and you're kind of, like, learning with them, and that's really fun,
yeah. I think. Especially with a show like Super, because, like, they're no longer, like, a lot of the characters that have had their development, you see them now in the developed form. You essentially see them as adults. And you can say that about Funimation as a company, too. Because, like, a lot of the voice actors that have done these characters, they've learned how to better perform them. Like, Monica Rial, who was at Anime Boston recently, she has become such... She's Bulma, and she kicks ass at it. And she also does Asui Suyu, or Froppy, best girl in all My Hero Academia, by the way. In My Hero Academia. And it's made careers on so many levels. I have to talk about GT a little bit. It was a thing. I like things about it. I was glad to have more Dragon Ball at the time.
Yeah, I mean, they filled in the gap.
But unfortunately, because of a lot of politics at Shueisha and TV Tokyo, like, it just never reached the glory of Z, because, one, it tried in its initial run to replicate the comedy aspect of the original Dragon Ball anime, and then when fans complained, it went back to the Z formula, which was solve every problem with your fist. But at that point, it was too little, too late. But it was too. But it still had its relevance. Like, a lot of the characters and the concepts from that show are still used in the games. Yeah. And just like Broly from the movies, it's like fans still accept certain aspects of it, like Super Saiyan 4. People still like that. I could take or leave it, but people love it. Again, like another thing, the games. Jesus Christ, those games! I love so many of them. Certain games I could do without, like the first Budokai games were kind of janky.
Like not too smooth control schemes.
Yes, but then when Part 3 came out, that was when American Dragon Ball fighting games found their stride. And almost every game after that has been pretty damn good. Like, I play Dragon Ball FighterZ religiously. It is definitely, I'm going to say it now, the best Dragon Ball fighting game ever.
Arc System Works knows how to get it done.
Oh, yeah. These are the Guilty Gear guys, so you give them something, they're going to make a good thing out of it. Honestly, I'd say it's probably one of the best anime games, period. Like, as far as anime fighting games go,
like, towards the source material?
Yes. I remember playing Dragon Ball GT Final Bout, I believe it was. I was just so happy to have a Dragon Ball game with that. I could ignore the glaring problems. I probably couldn't play it now if I ever got my hands on it, just because I'd be like, nah, I'm good. But yeah, Dragon Ball, it's that important. I can just ramble on forever about it and everything it's done for me and for the anime community to this point.
I interject. Super Saiyan 4, Blue would spank that monkey.
I guess we'll never know now, will we?
Well, I'm sure somebody had done like a fan comic or animation out there somewhere, but yeah,
possibly. So how about you, 606? What do you have for us tonight?
Alright, so I'm going to go with a fave of mine. Again, I'm going to talk about some Naruto today. Different things like that. We're going to start with characters that I love. First, I'm going to go with my boy Rock Lee. The most splendid ninja in the village, in my opinion. I talked about it a little bit in, the first episode, but I think I got to Rock Lee late. I was too focused on Shikamaru, who I also love, but Rock Lee owns my heart. Have you seen Naruto?
You mean Boruto's dad?
Moving on. That was a good meme for, a week. I'll give him that.
A fair one.
Yeah, it had its time, as all memes do. But if you don't know about Naruto, you've got the little sunshine boy. He grows up without his family. He wants to be Hokage. That is his dream. You see him grow up with Team 7, including Sakura, Sasuke, and you've got Kakashi, and different characters throughout the village that you find out about as well. And you just kind of, it's about his journey to becoming Hokage and becoming the ninja that he wants to be. You find out that he is the Jinchuriki, he has the 9 tails within him, and that is a big thing that he also has to overcome. It's just an all-around amazing story. I love it. So back to Rock Lee. Yeah, he's just, he does not have ninjutsu. Like, he can't control chakra. He can't, do these jutsu like the rest of the ninjas can. And so you have to see him, you get to see him progress in his taijutsu. So just fighting with his fists and, overcoming all of these other ninjas that have it so much easier than he does. He's out there training every single day, every night. If he can't do 100 push-ups, he's doing 100 sit-ups. If he can't do 100 sit-ups, he's gonna do 100 laps. And it's He's just the sweetest character in the whole show, and I love him so much. Some other honorable mentions I have here are Kakashi Sensei. I love him to death. One of the greatest senseis there are. I'm going to save that for another episode. But and then I've got Gaara, obviously, Sunshine Boy, Nart. What would I do without him? I don't really know. And then Jiraiya, a problematic fave of mine, pervy sage. Gotta love it. As for some characters I hate, I gotta go with Sasuke.
Mr. Crawling in My Skin.
Yeah, number one on my list. I mean, I get it. I was a little emo kid, too. Like, back when I was in fifth grade, I watched it, and I loved Sasuke. I thought he was so cute. And then I saw Gaara, and I was like, okay, screw this Sasuke guy. But as I watched it, as an adult, I was just like, oh my god, he's the most annoying character in the whole anime. Like, I spent the entire series, Naruto and Shippuden, just hating Sasuke. His ego is so inflated, and he's so ignorant to everything else that is going around him, and he has this sense of revenge that is just taking over him, and it's just listen to Naruto, just hold his hand, like, come back to the village and
everything
will be fine. Like, you don't even know. Oh, he doesn't even know.
The phone call theory.
Yeah, right. Not that he listened to Naruto the 7 times that they, like, interacted between the time that he actually came back to the village and the time he left. Like, so, I don't know if it's actually 7. I just said that.
It's roughly around the same time.
Yeah. Might well have been.
Yeah, so there's that. Obviously, I hate Donzo. There's really nothing to say. If you watch the show, fuck that guy. Kabuto as well. He's a little shit. Like, I a lot of feelings about him too, but that's just an honorable mention. We won't go there. Some favorite villains. All of the Akatsuki.
Yes.
Yeah. Every single member has their amazing moments. Itachi, Kisame, Sasori, and my favorite, Obito. Well, yes. Toby, sorry, spoilers.
Spoilers!
I just have so much love in my heart for Obito. His whole story is just so heartbreaking to me personally. I love him. Orochimaru, one of the coolest characters, I think, in the whole show. A million different faces you see from him, but he's always so badass and so...
I want to say something about that.
Yeah.
He's like the MVP of that show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Longest running.
Yeah, absolutely. You can't, like, stop him.
Yeah, like, death can't even hold him down. Oh, spoiler again, sorry.
But, yeah, that's alright. Fuck spoiler. Orochimaru is just so cool. You can't stop him. And I really have a special place in my heart for him because in the last couple episodes, they're really cute. The whole wedding scene. Ooh, some more spoilers. But, like, throughout those couple episodes, you see, like, Orochimaru and Yamato just, like, prancing around, like, the village. And it's so funny. Every time I see it, I can't stop laughing. It's so funny. So Orochimaru is great. And then, of course, Haku and Zabuza. Yeah, I know. My two favorite villains in the whole show. It's, you know, they're the first villains you meet. Like, they're...
Kenigenkai.
Yeah.
It's so formative to the series, too.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, those kids during that fight, they learn so much from them.
What it means to be a ninja in a fight.
Yeah, yes. Absolutely. And I feel like just that moment when you Naruto meets Haku in the forest as well, that's such an important, amazing moment. And then Zabuza is just one of the coolest looking characters in itself. Like, and then his whole interaction and fight with Kakashi is amazing. I love it.
Oddly enough, Zabuza and Orochimaru are voiced by one of the coolest American voice actors that there is, Steve Bloom.
Yes. He was also at Anime Boston this weekend. Yes. Very cool to see him there.
You got to meet Tom?
Yeah, no, I didn't actually get to meet him, but I spent a lot of time. No, not that much time, but I spent some time just kind of ogling at the fact that that man was there, like in the same room as me, you know? Very cool. Wish I could have met him. That would have been awesome. I want to talk about some ships, if that's cool.
That's totally cool.
Some of my favorite canon ships, I guess I'll start with, are obviously Kushina and Minato.
Oh, yes. They're so precious, aren't they?
They're so good. Their whole relationship is just so wholesome, and it hurts a lot. I'm gonna save that. Go in more detail about that later. Temari and Shikamaru.
Oh yes.
I love them together. I think their chemistry is just so cool, and the way that like came together is really cute. You know, when their whole first date thing happens, and you know everybody else wants the like are trying to. You know, help them. I don't know. It's really cute. I don't want to go into too much detail there if you haven't seen it, but it's really, really cute. I love them. I think Temari is one of the most badass girls in this show. So for her to be with one of the coolest guys, it only makes sense.
Yeah.
And also, I think that she definitely would whip that man right into shape. I think it really works. And then finally, I have, I kind of call this canon, Tsunade and Jiraiya. I love them together. They're really cute. That one fucking moment before the whole shebang happens between them is really, really sweet. I think that they've, you know, been together and have had this connection for a long time. But, you know, there are always things that keep things from happening. Both of their egos, both of their addictions to these different things. Tsunade, her gambling, and Jiraiya, women. Yep. Yeah. Sometimes those things happen, but I think that in a perfect world, Jiraiya would have never left us. He would have came back to the village, and that would have happened.
He would have been training Boruto.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And that hurts. But, and then I have some not so canon ships that I love. Naru Sasu is my favorite ship ever. I hate, y'all know I don't like Sasuke, but you know, Naruto and Sasuke in a perfect world are totally dating.
My question to you is this: who is the seimei in that relationship? You know, Uke and seimei, like, I believe Uke.
Top and bottom?
Yes.
I don't know the difference, but Sasuke is a bottom. That's all I'm saying. once Naruto goes, like, sage mode or, like, it's over for Sasuke. I don't know.
Yes.
But it's, or, I mean, they switch it up. It's a whole thing. but, and then there's Sakura Ino, the best lesbian ship there is. The two most badass pretty women, and also they love each other, like, as kids, like, the way that they talk about each other, always, their relationship, they have their moments where they totally fight, but
oh, Billboard Brown, you know, pig?
Yikes. I think they love each other, and, so there's that, and then, some ships I hate, Naruto and Sakura, with a whole ass passion.
Not a fan.
No, a lot of people love it, and I'm really sorry, but I don't. That one episode where Sakura Sakura confesses her love to Naruto, and it's like total bullshit. Like, it was so gross watching that. I was like, how could... No, you don't. And he loves you. Why would you ever do that? Like, it hurt me to my whole core, you know? and then also Sakura with, like, Kakashi or Itachi. It's so gross. All y'all crackheads need to stop with that, please. that's all I have to say about
Christ
that.
Please, deviants, stop.
Some of my favorite fight scenes.
God, yes.
So obviously, I mentioned real quick Team 7 versus Zabuza and Haku. The first one you see, so iconic, favorite, so good. Also, there's two from Rock Lee that I love. First is Lee and Gaara, obviously.
Yes.
That's when you see Lee shine. And just what a little powerful little ninja. I love him. It was so amazing to see him work so hard to be one of the most iconic characters in, you know, Naruto. Gaara was someone that, you know, everyone was so afraid of, and to see little Lee fight him with so much power without any ninjutsu was amazing. So yes. Good. And then also Lee's drunken fist.
Yes. That entire fight.
Yeah, that fight is really also very iconic. It's really, really funny. If you haven't seen it, you gotta watch it. It's Lee's amazing. That's all there is. And then, obviously, Madara versus the allied shinobi forces.
Ooh, yes.
Oh, I know they dragged it out for a really long time, but it's so good. Like, that whole, all of those episodes are jam-packed with some crazy shit. Like,
especially the hand-to-hand moments.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Like close quarters?
Yes. Yeah. It's just like, pop, 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 pop. Nope. Mm-hmm. It's like, and this is why I am, this is what I'm like, I have a statue of me right here.
Yeah. It's insane. And you get to see him fight one-on-one with a lot of characters that we love, so that's really scary as well.
Yes.
I don't want to give you any spoilers, but Might Guy... What a man.
Yes.
What a man. Unbelievable. So good. Gotta watch it. And then finally, Sakura and Lady Chiyo versus Sasori.
Oh, that was such a good fight.
Yeah. It was a really, really cool one. Especially for someone who, despite the whole loving Naruto bullshit thing, really, really likes Sakura. I love Sakura. I don't think that... I can't stand when people... talk about how she's garbage and did nothing. Like, it's really, really annoying to me, and it's like I can't stand it kind of thing. This fight is so cool. You get to see Sakura fight and do what she does, and this is, you know, such a big moment for her, and I do have a lot of respect for Sakura as a character. She surpassed Tsunade. Like, she did. Absolutely. Like, and while they were gone and fighting, like, she was at home, like, working at the hospital and, like, you know, helping people here at home, and she did so much for the whole village, and I really have a lot of respect for Sakura and getting to see her have that moment. And Lady Chiyo was so cool, getting to see her fight Sasori. Like,
yes,
that was a really cool thing. That fight was awesome. And then lastly, I just want to talk about some really painful deaths, have a moment of silence for some characters that we lost. First, I want to start with Asuma-sensei. I actually got to meet someone this weekend. I was outside of Anime Boston, and I was actually smoking a cigarette, and I looked to my left, and there was Asuma-sensei smoking a cigarette next to me. I kind of had a moment, and I was like, this is, like, on my bucket list. Like, I've always wanted to, like, smoke a cigarette with Asuma.
Do you have a flip lighter?
I don't know. He was there smoking before I got there. I would hope so. And he was really sweet. I believe it's Mikey Cosplay on Instagram. So that was really cool. Asuma was one of the coolest characters, and his death was really, really, really painful.
Yes.
Seeing Shikamaru cry like that hurt me a lot. Yeah, he's a really underrated sensei, in my opinion. I think he was really, really powerful, really great. Would have been an amazing dad. Rest in peace, Asuma. Also, Jiraiya. That one was a hard pill to swallow.
Yeah.
That fight with Pain, that was a lot. Seeing him fight so many of them at once, what a guy. I know he was a creepy pervert. I'm a woman and I'm not supposed to love him, but I do. He's so great. What a great character. He was very, you know, I feel like in most of these characters, you're humanizing the villain a lot anyway. Yeah. You go to really love every character except for Sasuke, Kabuto, Danzo, Sasuke's dad. And then also Neji, lost him way too soon. I would have loved to see some little Neji 10 babies.
Some time with Himawari.
Yeah. Yeah, that one was really, really hard. Lost a soldier way, way, way too soon. And then finally, there's Kushina and Minato. The series goes very deep into a lot of their story and how they died, and you get to meet them after their death, and Naruto gets to meet them as well, and all of those scenes are just so heart-wrenching.
Yes.
I'm a big crier. I don't know if you can tell by my voice. I'm like, I've been emotional this entire time. But I cry. I sob every time, and I mentioned it last week, but Kushina is voiced by Laura Bailey, so
yes,
you know, getting that sweet mom voice, that and the interactions between her and Naruto, and same with Minato when they finally get to meet and fight together, and it hurts. It hurts so bad. I love them. Rest in peace to all that we lost. Those I didn't mention.
In a lot of ways, it felt like a return to like that feeling I got from Dragon Ball. Because I watched that and a couple other Shonen Jump series religiously. Like, yeah. Back before like we had Crunchyroll and whatnot, I was on datebayo.com religiously. Like, when's the next episode come out? When's the next episode come out? My first one goes to Pain versus Naruto.
Oh.
Little backstory. Originally, I heard rumors that Kishimoto wanted to end it there. Oh. Which, that would have been yes. I remember reading it in the manga, and I'm just like, oh my god, this is it. This is like him finally coming into fruition as the main character. I remember going on Facebook after the end of that fight saying, he's finally pulling his way as the main character! Yes! Because the moment he pops in from like the Sage World and sees Pain, he's like, "Did you do this?" Mm-hmm. Pain's like, "So what? What if I did?" He asks again, did you do this? I'm like, yeah. Boom, he mushes him to the ground with a Rasengan, like...
Yeah, I mean, he comes back, and the entire village is gone. Like, it is a big, huge, like...
Crater.
I can't even imagine how horrifying that must be for him. Like, that's his whole world. Like, that's what he's been fighting for this entire time. Like,
and... Ichiraiku Ramen!
Exactly!
And it's like, at that point in the series, like, he has, like, basically gained the respect of everyone in the village. Like, he's saved people in the village so many times, and, like, he was more or less a hero. Yep. But... And he, like, forged some unbreakable bonds, and to destroy that, it was like, you don't do that. Mm-hmm. This is my house.
I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it. When he can't feel or sense Kakashi's chakra, that's a big fucking moment,
yeah.
too. Like, that must have hit him so hard. He's scanning this whole village for the people that he cares about to make sure that everybody that he cares about is still there and to not, you know, his sensei, he's not there.
That Kakashi moment. Like, I don't want to spoil that either, but damn. My second favorite fight would have to be Neji versus Naruto.
Yeah. Good one.
Classic.
Because that was like the ultimate clash of ideologies. It's like hard work versus innate talent. And I don't know a single person in the world who can't relate to something like that, either from one end or the other. And that was like the moment that Naruto really started developing as a character for me. Because he just, like, he talked the talk and he walked the walk. He's like, no matter what you do, I'm going to bust my ass to be better. Absolutely. You can talk all the trash you want. Like, until I get what I want, I'm going to keep fighting.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That was the point when I feel like I fell in love with Neji too. Because it's just like, when he realized, like, wow, maybe I'm not as bad as I thought I was.
Yeah.
And there are just so many other great fights. Even like the final fight was great, but... I think I've gushed enough about some of the fights in Naruto for now.
I could literally go all day.
Right?
Naruto, I have to say the fight of Sasuke and Itachi versus Kabuto.
Ooh, yes. So good.
Yeah, that one.
Fun fact about me, years ago on LiveJournal, I was in a Naruto RP and I played as Itachi.
Oh, wow.
My account name was Red Eye Weasel. It was an alternate reality RP called Konoha Academy.
Oh, wow.
They were all in high school, and this was like when I was probably at my most obnoxious as a weeb, because I'm like trying to push for ideas that the creators didn't want to do, and I'm just like, I eventually got Orochimaru into the game as some sort of ideal. Like, he was never like I forgot what happened to me in the end with that game, but, like, I just walked away. Orochimaru never came to be. Because they were just trying to do day-to-day life. I'm like, I want Orochimaru.
Not my slice of life.
No, sir. But, yeah, he was fun to play. I actually was, like, I had him, like, hitting on Temari a lot, too, because, like, they were so close in age in the series. And it's just like...
That's a crack ship if I've ever heard one.
Yes. And my Itachi was a drug dealer, and the drug that he sold was called Sharingan.
Oh my god.
I got the idea from Cowboy Bebop.
Red Eye.
Yes. And like, they could... students in the academy would use it to cheat on tests. It's like, they have super hyper-focused vision. They're the teacher's notes. I've got them.
Oh, wow. That's wild.
And also, Itachi was an information broker at the academy as well. All right, Mr. Mechanic, what you got for us over here?
One that I can always gush about, I have the most knowledge on, is Gundam. I'm sticking with my favorite, the Universal Century.
Right on.
Yep. I mean, I am going to give props to G Gundam. I mean, that's pretty much the Dragon Ball Z of the franchise.
Just tell me about it.
Gundam Wing is kind of like the A-Team of the series. Mm-hmm. Rarely see people dying on screen.
You're right.
Let's start at the beginning at Universal Century 0079.
Oh, Lord.
Ah, yes. The One-Year War. Where the series starts 9 months into the conflict of the Earth Federation Force, which is pretty much the Earth government, and a rogue space colony nation, the Principality of Zeon, which has my favorite mass-produced mech ever, the MS-06. Is it the 06? Yes, the MS-06 Zaku 2.
Yes.
Yep, the old Mono Eye.
Those are some creepy-ass mechs, too.
Yeah. Like, they went all out in their R&D for the Zeon department, but yeah, the Federation, like, they sort of had, like, that, like, they sort of had, like, that toy look to them, while, like, the Zeon forces looked like they were, like, kind of, like, soldier mechs.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, comparison of looks, but, anywho, the Federation don't have any, mobile suits of their own yet. They're, in development in a colony called Side 7, where the pilot, Amuro Ray, happens to be the son of the guy that's developing the Gundam itself. So he's had time to brush up on some reading on it. Oh, hey, Dad's not around. What's this? Oh, it's a diagram to a machine.
Uh-oh.
So he winds up being the pilot of the Gundam and manages to take down two Zakus, but in the process of taking one out with his beam saber, it ripped a hole in his colony. His dad had a spacesuit on, but he still got sucked out into the void.
Whew. Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was pretty rough. So, he manages to be stationed on the mobile base, which is named White Base. It's staffed by an inexperienced military crew. Most of the seasoned veterans and stuff died in the initial attack from the the Zeon scouting party. And so some volunteer civilians also ended up being recruited as well. And they made their way to Earth with a constant Zeon presence, so hunting them down. Oof.
I guess to the ends of the Earth would not be an appropriate term for that.
Oh, no, because they go to Earth, they get resupplied, the Gundam gets some minor upgrades, but nothing, like, really major, just, like, the magnetic joints make it, like, react faster to targeting.
Nice.
And they're shipped back off into space once the tide of the war changes in the Federation's favor, because they got some of the battle schematics and whatnot from the Gundam battle data. And they mass-produced GMs, which are sort of like little knockoffs of the Gundam.
Yeah.
I mean, they sort of have the same specs, but they're, like, a bit weaker.
So the Diet Coke of Gundam.
Yes. I couldn't have phrased it better.
Just one calorie. Just one calorie. Not mech enough.
The output isn't that high. Should have compressed it a bit more because there's a shit ton more to go.
Oh yeah, there's a ton of lore. There are like,
see, because in the order of the series, not like chronologically when they were released, but in the timeline, there's original Mobile Suit Gundam, the side stories, 08th MS Team, your favorite War in a Pocket.
Yes, which I can go on forever about.
I say Gundam Thunderbolt after that because that also takes place a little, like a few months after the One-Year War. Then there's 0083, Stardust Memory.
Ooh, yes.
That's the one with GP-01 and GP-02, the Gundam that's equipped with a nuke.
Yes, and one of the greatest Gundam pilots ever, Kuroraki.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Right, after that is Zeta Gundam, which takes place 4 years after 0083. At that point, the Federation has a corrupt branch known as the Titans, and they're pretty much the main antagonist of that series. I mean, after that one, there's Double Zeta Gundam, which is the following year. Like, the Neo Zeon forces came near the end of Zeta Gundam, but a good amount of their fleet was destroyed, but not the main fleet, just the advanced fleet. So Double Zeta is like the buildup of the Neo Zeon army as it approaches Earth again.
And that's what leads into Counterattack, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Counterattack takes place 6 years after, where it's Shar Aznavour, like, reveals he didn't die in Zeta Gundam, and he's now leading the Neo Zeon army, like, in order to make the Earth inhabitable for humans, for them just to migrate into space to give the Earth time to reacclimate itself to, like, a healthier environment for us later on. But dropping an asteroid on to the Earth to make it so it's, you know, I can't really agree with those tactics. That seems like counterproductive, in all honesty.
Well, I mean, if you gave them enough time to escape, maybe. If you give enough time for animals and humans to escape, maybe.
Yeah, just throw them all in an arc. They'll be fine.
Sure.
Launch!
I mean, it works so well in WALL-E.
That's true.
Yeah.
And 3 years after that was Unicorn Gundam, which is sort of like, it would be the conclusion of the Universal Century era, but it's more of like the conclusion of like the Federation Zeon conflict.
So there's more content after that?
Yes. 30 years after that is Gundam F-91.
Wow.
Where that's the Crossbone Vanguard makes their appearance. Like, they're their own army. Like, formed from various colonies in space.
Oh, I didn't realize it was that far down the timeline.
Mm-hmm. And, like, 3 years later is the manga series Crossbone Gundam.
I only know about Crossbone Gundam personally from, like, the games and from, like, the model kits.
Yeah, but then kick it down another 30 years, you have the most grim one of the settings, Victory Gundam.
Yeah, that one's kind of infamous, isn't it?
Yeah, that's... The Earth Federation is pretty much, like, in, like, tatters. Like, they're, like, loosely holding control over the Earth, and, like, a new threat, the Zanskar Empire, which formed in the colonies after all, like, the conflict, like, they decided to pretty much, like, wipe out, like, all the residents on Earth and just, like, re-inhabit it themselves. So, like, they're going, like, full-scale genocide. They don't care who, what, you live here? Okay, get out of here. I'm living there now.
Which this reminds me. Tell the folks listening what the creator's nickname is.
Oh, creator, Yoshiyuki Tomino.
Also known as?
Kill 'em all, Tomino!
Yes, and for good reason.
Mm-hmm. As from the previous episode, I was talking about Ideon.
Jeez.
Space runaway Ideon.
He's all about the death. He could probably teach Joss Whedon and George R. R. Martin a thing or two.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god. So much trauma.
Oh yeah.
Now what are some moments in the franchise that stand out to you?
One of the moments that stand out for me, a moment from Unicorn Gundam, the assault on Torrington Base in Australia. Torrington Base was the beginning scene for Stardust Memory. That's where they housed the GPO-1 and GPO-2. But, yeah, that was, like, the random Zeon remnants, like, doing an assault on that Federation base. It was well-animated. Action-packed, too.
Oh, yeah, the animation in Unicorn is brilliant, and anyone who's a fan of mech anime or just Gundam, I recommend they're OVAs, right?
Yes, OVAs, and also, like, the movies are, like, in a complete box set.
Yes. What about characters? There are so many important characters in the franchise.
Okay. Since there are no real, like, assigned good guy, bad guys. Like, it's more of like there are like reasonable people on either side, as well as there are power hungry assholes on either side as well. For reasonable people on the Federation, Amuro Ray, the pilot of the Gundam, also the pilot of the new Gundam in Char's counterattack. She helps to push away that asteroid that's falling to Earth. Let's see. I really liked Kai Shinden. He's one of the gun cannon pilots.
Oh, yes, Kai. I actually didn't care much for him as a character.
Yeah, he gets better as like the series progresses, because like after the original Gundam, he makes an appearance in Zeta Gundam when they're like going back to infiltrate the Jaburo base, where like the Titans are now controlling it in place of the Federation.
Yeah,
and like he's gone from like sniveling coward to like secret like spy operative, like. He's sort of, like, worked that trait into, like, something that can work in the real world. Like he takes up, like, gathering information and stuff for the AU, who's up against the Titans.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I really need to get into Zeta at some point. I know it's all on Hulu, right?
No. On right now, Hulu, they only have the OFMS team, the Origin, they have 00 and Gundam Wing.
Okay, aside from any more are there any more characters you want to gush about?
Ryu Jose, one of the original pilots of a gun cannon.
Oh god. Now I'm about to cry.
I was torn when he sacrificed himself. When let's see, it was Rambaral's wife. What was her name? Oh, Hamon Crowley. Like, since Ramba had already bit the dust, she decided there was nothing else left for her here, so she just packed, like her hovercraft full of explosives and went to ram the white base at full speed. Now, Amuro's in the Gundam, like, pushing it back, and, like, she got on, like, one of those Magellan gun tops, like, the tanks that fly up, like, top half. And, like, she's coming in to, like, to ram the Gundam to, like, have this happen. And Ryu Jose comes in and crashes right into her, averting that. And, he was the first member of the White Base to die.
Okay, another important question.
Yes.
Any waifus?
Waifus!
Yes.
Let's see, I would have to say Sailor Mass, also known as Artesia Zia.
Oh, that's right, she's royalty, isn't she?
No, I'm sorry. Zion was her dad's first name, Zion Zun Daikun. It was Artesia Daikun. Yeah.
All right. Wow, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Actually, like, I remember when it came on Cartoon Network and kind of just fawning over myself.
Yeah.
She was a very strong, capable character. Like, did she ever end up piloting a mech at any point in the series?
She did. French. She did pilot the Gundam at first, when Amuro went AWOL. No, he wasn't AWOL. He was in the brig after going AWOL, and they were attacked by the Goof. Like, that's where he got the initial impression. I was like, oh, the Gundam's nothing. I mean, she didn't, like, do too well in the original series, but in the Origin, like, she really excels as a character. Like, have you seen Gotten Far in the Origin yet?
I haven't yet.
I don't want to spoil too much, but she's a very strong, like, leading role in those. Like, the Origin stories actually, like, follows, like, Artesia and her brother Casbald, like, escape from the colony after their father gets assassinated by the Zabi family, who are the leaders of the Principality of Zeon during the One Year War.
Yeah, that's right. I remember. Speaking of which, I remember this. I remember the scene where Char gets his revenge on Garmin Zabi.
Oh yeah,
that was like. Yeah, I was just lying to you about being friends. I actually hate your ass. Bye!
He's like, what was it? Blame this on the unfortunate,
circumstances of your birth?
Yeah, something along those lines, of your heritage.
Yes, I believe. And that set off, like, the real meat of the war in that series, too, didn't it? I will say, like, Gundam as a franchise kind of just... It did so many things for mecha and for anime. Like, it was probably, like... Although Gundam Wing was my first series, Gundam as an IP...
Same here.
Yeah, it introduced me to the idea of characters in war not necessarily being black and white. Like, especially Mobile Suit Gundam... A lot of the villain faction, quote unquote, they're dressed in like the stereotypical idea of what the bad guy faction looks like, and like most super robot shows, but they're not all that bad. Some of them are decent people. They have families. They have hopes. They have aspirations. They want a better world, but they just happen to be willing to destroy another person's hopes and dreams in order to do it. And that is the complexity of war. Not every person fighting is a cold-blooded killer. Some of them are just trying to make sure their family can sleep peacefully.
And I feel like we can say that about all three of the shows that we have talked about today.
Absolutely.
A lot of, you know, the quote-unquote villains that we have met in these shows are, you know, not bad people, like, bad people. I mean, you may have, you know, taken the wrong road to, you know, get where you want to go, but, you know, there are still people. They are still people, and they still do have those, like you said, hopes, dreams, and aspirations, families, things that they care about, people that they care about, people they're fighting for.
Or an ideal that they're fighting for.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Now, characters from that series I'd like to punch in the face. Top on the list, Bask Ohm from Zeta Gundam. He is one of the top commanders of the Titans.
Was he the one with like the blonde pompadour?
No, that's Jared Mesa. He's Camille Biden's rival. Okay. He's a Titans pilot. But... No, Bask Ohm is the guy with, like, the circle red goggles and, like, that little cap. Anyways, he works through, like, blackmailing and, like, subterfuge, like, plots. Like, in the original series, like, Camille's parents work for, like, the Federation, like, they're engineers. But, like, of course, since, like, the Titans are, like, a branch of the Federation, they have, like, a little more, like, leeway into, like, you know, we need you to step aside over into this, you know, little conversation. When Camille steals two of the Mark II Gundams and boards the Argama with the other members of the AU, which is an acronym for Anti-Earth Union Group, I mean, they're not against, like, the Earth itself. It's just, like, what it has become after the One-Year War.
Yeah.
And, like, Bask Ohm sends out Camille's mom in, like, a little, like survival pod, like, out into space, but, like, on, like, a tethered line. And he gives, like, Jared, like, these information, like a, like he sends him over like a message and says, "If you see the Gundam, try to grab that bomb, take it out before he can take it."
Jesus!
And of course, Camille goes out and he sees his mom in the capsule. He reaches out.
Yeah, that's very punchable.
Yeah. That's right there. But granted, Bask Ohm never really does get punched in the face. Something larger than a fist hits him eventually. So You can be rest assured, you'll see him put in his place.
Good, I don't know that guy, but I don't like him. No. That's really rude. Oh my god. Yikes.
Any others?
Well, Jared Mesa does get punched in the face a good amount, so I guess that's covered.
He's been punched in the face.
Yeah. Right. Pow. Yeah. Giren Zabi.
Where is he in relation to?
He's in the original One Year War. He's the elder Zabi brother, the one that's like pretty much like the mouthpiece for like the Principality of Zeon.
Jeez.
Now I'm a fan of the mech design. I'm not a fan of the politics in that. You know, when you're advocating dropping colonies to, you know, speed up the war, you kind of deserve a punch in the face repeatedly.
Yeah, I'd say that's going beyond chaotic good and going straight into chaotic evil, maybe? No? Yeah. I'm going to say chaotic evil, because, like, you know, we're trying to win by any means necessary. Your death will go towards a greater cause.
Well, he's always been a shifty guy. He just went from lawful evil to chaotic evil.
Okay, there we go. Or punchable characters, I should say.
Ah, punchable characters. Now, protagonist, I would punch in the face. I was thinking maybe punching Bright in the face, but I'd mostly get a Bright slap for that.
So, a little backlog for those of you who don't know what the Bright slap is. So, in the original Mobile Suit Gundam series, the protagonist, Amore, when he first starts piloting the Gundam, he's like, I'm hot shit. Like, you need me. No one else can pilot this for me. But me. And Bright Noah, the captain of White Base, goes up to Amuro, doesn't say anything, just gives him the iron palm act right to his face.
You hit me! My own father didn't hit me!
And it's gone down in meme history.
Oh, yeah. Though he did get, himself Bright slapped in the second episode of Zeta Gundam.
Oh, jeez, spy.
Some thugs at the Order of Bast Om.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, there's just no liking that guy, is there?
What? Like, was he just at the wrong place at the wrong time?
No, he was actually giving them some, logistics information and, like, saying, you know, it's not, like, too wise of an idea to have your guys, like, being all, like, careless and rowdy like that, because like one of the new Mark II Gundams crashed into a building, and like he's like, we're Titans, we outrank you, and he just had his guys beat him up.
Jeez.
Oh, he's like, try that next time you try to talk down to us.
Like, don't tell me how to do my job.
Exactly. That's pretty much the reason why they beat him up.
So is that all you got?
Pretty much.
Alright, and I think unless there's anyone else with anything else, I think we can probably wrap this bad boy up. So we will start with my man over here at the end.
Mechanical here, signing off, and goodbye.
And as always, it has been lovely, 606, over and out.
Alright, this is Byron D0. And I will be signing out. Be sure to follow us on the various social media platforms. Just created a Vero account recently. Haven't done much with it, but it's a thing. So we are on all the social medias, except for LinkedIn, because LinkedIn is not that kind of place. But until next time, this is the Weeb Trash Cam Podcast saying, Ja Matana!